Deuteronomy 3:27. The eternal God is thy refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. The eternal God is your dwelling place. This is a picture of safety and security. Various translations have your refuge. The eternal God may be expressed as God who never dies or who lives forever is your refuge. Underneath are the everlasting arms. That is, God's arms are placed to maintain, support, and save his people. He does this through the Christ. His power is your support forever is clear, but loses the beauty of the metaphor. It could be more clearly rendered, he carries us in his arms. The doctrine is that the infinitude of God in relation to time is that God is eternal. The infinitude of God relative to space is his immensity or omnipresence, that he is everywhere. But as it's relative to duration in respect of time, from our perspective, it is his eternity. He is free from all the limitations of space, so he is exalted above all the limitations of time. He is not more in one place than another, but is everywhere equally present, so he does not exist during one period of duration more than another. With him, there's no distinction between the past, present, and future. All things are equally and always present to him. With him, duration is an eternal now. This is the popular and scriptural view of God's eternity. For the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. Psalm 90 and verse 2. Of old hast thou laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of thy hands. They shall perish, but thou shalt endure. Yea, all of them shall wax old like a garment. As a vesture shalt thou change them, and they shall be changed. But thou art the same, and thy years shall have no end. Psalm 102:25-27. This God, he is the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity. Isaiah 57:15. I am the first and the last, and besides me there is no God. Isaiah 44:6. 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday when it is past. Psalm 90:4. One day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. 2 Peter 3:8. This Jesus, this God, he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Hebrews 13:8. God is he which is, ever is, which was, which is to come. Revelation 1:4. Throughout the Bible, he's called the eternal or everlasting God, who alone has immortality. The primary revelation of himself, his primal revelation to his covenant people, when Moses said, "Who is it that sends me?" His response was, "I am." What is taught in these and similar passages is first that God is without beginning or of years or end of days. He is and always has been and always will be. And second, that to him there is neither past nor future. The past and the future are always and equally present to him. These are scriptural facts and necessarily follow from the nature of God as self-existent, infinite, and immutable. And with these representations, the teaching of theologians for the most part agrees. In this understanding is the denial of all succession in the divine consciousness. Our idea of eternity is arrived at from our idea of time, because we're limited by it. We are conscious of existence in space, and we are conscious of protracted or continuous existence. The ideas of space and duration are necessarily given in the consciousness of continuous existence, but for God, it's not like that. He is eternal. There are two senses in which succession is denied to God. Time first has reference to external events. They are ever present to the mind of God, where all things exist. He views them in all the relations, whether causal or chronological. He sees how they succeed each other in time, as we see a passing pageant, all of which would be taken in one view. In this, there is perhaps nothing which absolutely transcends our comprehension. The second aspect of the subject concerns the relation of succession to the thoughts and acts of God. When we are ignorant, it's wise to be silent. We have no right to affirm or deny when we cannot know what our affirmation or denial may involve or imply. We know that God, though, is constantly producing new effects. Effects which succeed each other in time. But we do not know that these effects are due to successive exercises of the divine efficiency. He is always working. How? We are silent on this. It is indeed incomprehensible to us how it should be, though, otherwise. The miracles of Christ were due to the immediate exercise of the divine efficiency. God is timeless. That what he does in hearing and answering prayer and in his daily providence, he does from eternity. It's certain that God is subject to all the limitations of personality, if there are any. But as such limitations are the conditions of his being a person and not a mere involuntary force, they are the conditions of his infinite perfection. As constant thought and activity are involved in the very nature of a spirit, these must belong to God. And so far as thinking and acting involve succession, succession must belong to God. There are mysteries connected with chronological succession in our nature, which we cannot explain. If unable to comprehend ourselves, we should not pretend to be able to comprehend God. How does this idea of eternity apply to us? God is an eternal refuge. A true believer has a place of refuge to fly. On all occasions, God is known to be the godly man's refuge. He is preserved under the wings of the Almighty in the day of evil. He finds God in and through Christ a refuge both in life and death. The true believer finds God as a fortress in life, not only against cruel men, but also against conscience, the law, and the wrath of God. The hour of conversion, when his soul is full of frights and terrors, he hides in the clefts of this rock and is safe. In great providential straits, when distresses compass him about, he finds God prompt and ready to help him. In strong temptations and impetuous assaults, he flees to God by faith and is secure. Strong temptations make hypocritical professors to fly away. These are the roes and hinds of the field and are soon frightened away. Yes, strong temptations may weaken grace in the best, but yet they only bruise the believer's heel. His head is helmeted by the power of the Spirit of Christ. Therefore, they are said to be preserved in Jesus Christ, as Jude 1 says. That is, they are preserved in union to Christ, by Christ's power, by his Spirit. The true believer finds God as a refuge in the hour of death. When his senses are stupefied, his sight fails him, his speech is low and faltering, his strength faints, medicine proves useless, and friends weep about him. When the world looks pale, and all worldly comforts are insipid, when his eye strings crack and the waves of death are ready to go over his soul, this God is his refuge. Though I walk side by side with death, though my bones are cast into the grave, you're with me to look after my dust and the rotten relics of mortality. Though my life depart, you are with me to comfort me with your love that endures forever. Though I'm mounted on the pale horse of death, yet it will carry me to glory. The funeral of my body shall not be the funeral of my soul. It shall be the funeral of my miseries and mine iniquities. But my soul and my happiness you will take care of. Therefore I will not fear. For the mountain shall depart, the hills be removed. But my kindness shall not depart from you. Neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Lord, with mercy on you. Psalm 54:10. Or rather, Isaiah 54:10. Usually, a deathbed is a den of lions, when Satan tempts and troubles, ramps and roars. Oh, but God muzzles and chains him up. The devil is just a barking dog. Every hour of his life, the poor Christian does enough to damn himself forever. Oh, but both in life and in his death, the arms of God's mercy grasp about him and keep him close and keep him safe, because the eternal God is his refuge, and he is carried underneath where he sees the everlasting arms. Amen.